interrupt this broadcast to bring you this important bulletin from the United Press. Flash, Washington.
We interrupt our program to bring you a special broadcast. The German news agency...
We interrupt this program to bring you a news bulletin from Washington. The White House has just announced...
Here is a news bulletin. Shots have reportedly been fired.
Here's another late development, and this news keeps coming in.
This is an NBC News hotline report.
Special report. Verdict sparks violence. National earthquake.
Secret testimony of the miserable souls who survived this terrifying ordeal. The incidents, places. My friend, we cannot keep this a secret any longer. Can your heart stand the shocking facts of the true story of Joshua P. Warren?
Of the sky and to high strangers around the globe. This is Speaking of Strange with Joshua P. Warren.
And the world is becoming more and more insane every day. Welcome to the program that gives you breaking news and insight regarding the paranormal and downright weird, where the unusual becomes usual. And we don't just discuss it, we go in the field to investigate. Oh my goodness, what a show tonight. Call the friends, call the family, tell them to gather around the radio. Where shall we begin? Well, you know, I just got back from Denver, Colorado, so why don't we start there? It's one of those creepy stories that's left over from the Halloween season. A United States Postal Service worker acknowledged that for weeks he did not report a corpse at a Denver home laying across the mailbox because he thought it was a Halloween display that just had not been taken down all this time. The Postal Service said, quote, "We do know the carrier delivered mail to the house. He remembered seeing something that he thought was related to Halloween. When he eventually learned it was not, he was shocked and extremely upset," end quote. So who knows exactly how long this corpse laid around. But obviously in Denver, as I well know, it's quite crisp and cold and dry and great conditions to keep a body looking rather fresh and intact for a long time. Thank you for joining us tonight. I am your host, Joshua P. Warren, author of books like Haunted Asheville, How to Hunt Ghosts, and The Secret Wisdom of Kukulcan. I'm founder and president of Lemur Paranormal Investigations, and my producer and engineer is Mr. Hardwood Forrest Connor. Good evening, Forrest.
Good evening, Joshua. Maybe this guy who didn't report the corpse was just like so... Well, you know, a couple of days after Halloween, it was the election.
Yeah.
And maybe he just was stoned off his butt and didn't really give a darn to report anything.
Well, you know, they say altitude sickness kind of sways the mindset, the decision-making process around that area. And I can speak a little bit to that. I'm going to tell you about my real experiences with being over 10,000 feet at various times. Forrest, have you been to that area?
I have not.
You know, the amazing thing is, I was supposed to just go to Denver, and then they were going to take me to Boulder, where I was going to do a TV shoot with George Norrie, which I'll talk about later. And I ended up deciding I was going to just milk this experience as much as possible.
Of course.
So I rented a truck, and I just drove all over the Rockies. And I drove to a place called Estes Park and even beyond. But in Estes Park is where you find a hotel called the Stanley.
And, of course, that is The Shining Hotel, all right? The place that inspired Stephen King to write The Shining. And later this hour, I'm going to go through all of my wild experiences in Colorado. But, you know, while I was at the Stanley, I met a woman there named Callie Sherrill, and she is the number one expert, in my opinion, on hauntings at the Stanley Hotel. She used to work there. She's been on shows like Ghost Adventures when they did their investigation there, and I think Ghost Hunters. Well, she's going to come on hour number two, and she's going to talk with us specifically about the real spooky stuff that happens at the real Shining Hotel. How cool is that?
Well, I know, that's pretty cool. I know Demented Patty had been there, and she brought back a bunch of stories about the Stanley Hotel and all the strange stuff that happens there.
Well, you know, you can still buy gifts there in the gift shop that say Red Rum, Red Rum. And also there is, I did not stay at the Stanley, but I talked to a lot of people who did. There is a channel in their hotel that just plays The Shining 24 hours a day, over and over.
Which version?
The R-rated, unedited, the maximum version that Stanley Kubrick provided for us for our pleasure and enjoyment. I bet that makes you a little bit jealous, doesn't it, Investigator Shelley, right?
Oh, it really does.
Yeah. I mean, so many synchronistic things happened on that trip. Obviously, Patty is a friend of both of ours. You've never been to Colorado. And did she bring you back some cool stuff? She probably brought you back a Red Rum thingy, right?
A Red Rum shot glass,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
She did.
I think, if I recall correctly, I think she even stayed in room 217, the room that Stephen King stayed in when he was inspired to write The Shining. The thing a lot of people don't realize is that actually he did not write The Shining there, nor was any of the movie version of The Shining filmed there. Stephen King was a professor, I think, nearby. He spent a vacation there, got the idea to write this, went back and wrote it, called it the Overlook Hotel, and then when Kubrick decided to shoot the movie version, Kubrick shot, I think he did his exteriors at a hotel in, I'm thinking, Utah. I think he also shot some in the Canadian Rockies, and then most of the interiors were done in studios in England. So, now, later on, there was like an ABC made-for-TV miniseries version that was shot at the Stanley. But the bottom line is, all these other versions that you may have in your mind of what this hotel looks like are fictional projections. This is the one real place that inspired the real emotion. This is, you know, this is the real hotel that you could call the Shining Hotel. So, and it's an amazing place. We'll talk a lot about it tonight, because what I'm going to do, as I often do when I take these kinds of trips, is just kind of go down the list and tell you about all the things that happened. And then, of course, hour two, we're going to dig into the Stanley with Callie. Hour three, we have a great Dark 30 hour. This is going to be one of these classic shows. I mean, hopefully everybody had a great Thanksgiving holiday, and so now we're moving toward Christmas. And then before that, however, we have December 21st, and I've got some news for everybody about December 21st, which ties into my Colorado trip, okay? You get the sense things got really wacky, yeah. I hope. But there is something that I want to talk about first. For years, this program produced an event called the Speaking of Strange UFO Experience. And we, of course, I think about 5 years we did this. We would get together and we would hold this event in which we would invite talented people to go out into the field and build fake UFOs. They had to be able to fly. They had to be safe. And then we would give prizes away. Well, there were two guys in particular who always were just really, really good at this. And one of them was Jim Robison. And Jim Robison, a lot of people called him Jet. He really sort of astounded us, especially because he was a balloonist. He was an artist with hot air balloon making. And on Friday, August 22nd of 2008, in Barnardsville, North Carolina, he created the Phoenix Lights effect, as we called it, for $25. Were you there that night, Forrest?
I was.
Were you, Shelley?
I was there.
He took $25 worth of balloon-making materials, and he put them together into a special formation and released them one after another. They weren't tied together, but he was able to get them to line up into a large triangular formation in the sky. And it looked like there was some craft that was like 2 miles wide, just gliding over the countryside. It was incredible. People got that tingle down their spine, you know, watching that a crafty, artistic person could do something like that with the right skill, with the right timing and knowledge for something like $25.
So what are you saying, the Phoenix lights are fake?
No. It definitely, of course, could be related to that. But here's what I will say. Unfortunately, I found out days ago, Jim Robison died.
Oh, no.
He was in his early 40s, I think, and he died of cancer. And so it was, you know, I knew that he had cancer, and it was a sad thing to face. But, you know, I'll be honest with you. I did not know Jim Robison all that well. I saw him at Yeva's parties, and he came every year and blew our minds at the UFO experience. But even though I didn't know him that well, I can tell you every single time I saw him, he had a smile on his face. He always had a kind word. He had a great warmth about him. Had a wonderful imagination, a lot of wonder in his eyes, which is why he was so good at building this kind of stuff. So even though he is no longer with us and the world is a bit darker place, I can tell you that from now on, whenever I see a balloon ascending and floating off into the sky, especially one lit with fire disappearing into the black, clear cosmos at night, I will think of Jim Robison, and I think that is a great legacy to have. So we remember Jim Robison. We thank him for his contributions. I think that he will probably be remembered even more than he thought for what he did in this field to bring joy and celebration to getting out there and getting his hands involved, you know, making things that were related to this field. So, Jim Robison, he's on an adventure now. He's one of those guys who's got the head start, Forrest.
He is.
We're all heading the same direction. Maybe sooner than we think, right? December 21st is on the way. But we're going to take a break. And when we come back from this break, I will begin telling you about my trip to Colorado, getting into mischief, having experiences I didn't expect to have, and even some information for you about the future. That's right. I think I met the real reincarnation of Nostradamus. I am your host, Joshua P. Warren. This is the program where the unusual becomes usual. We dig into the amazing, the extraordinary, the remarkable, the downright weird, keeping you company every Saturday. It's called Speaking of Strange, and we'll be back right after this.
Don't last long. The Colorado.
I just got back from the Rockies shooting a TV appearance with the one and only George Norrie from Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Speaking of Strange. I am your host, Joshua P. Warren. I've been a correspondent for Coast to Coast AM for a long time, and I've been appearing on that show for, I'm sure, at least 10 years. And once in a while, you know, George, he takes his radio interview format and does something visual with it. So George signed a contract to do this new interview show called Beyond Belief. And it's set up like The Tonight Show with Jay Leno. You know, George is at his desk. You've got the chair next to him. There's a live studio audience.
Well, you're a ghost hunter, huh?
And this thing airs on an internet network called Gaiam TV. That's G-A-I-A-M. It's like the word Gaia with the word with the phrase I am, Gaiam TV. And these things are going to start airing next month in December. I think December 14th. I'll keep you informed on that, because when you first sign up for Gaiam TV, you can get like a free 10-day trial. So I'm going to figure out when I'm going to be on, and then you should wait to sign up so you can watch my thing for free. Right? Of course.
Of course.
Exactly.
So, yeah, I will tell you guys when my date is going to come up there on Gaiam TV. And I talked to George about I talked to him about mind-powered machines to enhance paranormal phenomena. And we had our friend Dr. Mulder build us some wacky stuff, helmets and things that look like something Rick Moranis might wear in Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. Or space balls, or take your pick, with knobs and wires. We even got George to wear it, believe it or not. So the purpose of me going to Boulder, Colorado, was just to go there, be one of four people who was going to be interviewed, because they set it up to shoot four episodes, which comes into play later. Go there, do that, come home. That was the gist of it. But, of course, like I say, you know me, I make the most of everything. So I jump on the airplane to go out to Denver, which already Denver is a very interesting place because there's a lot of conspiracy related to the Denver airport. But I must tell you this, and I probably, I hate to just give out people's names on the radio, but I'm going to do it because I'm standing in line to get on the airplane, and there is a man in front of me. He looks like he may have a little Italian heritage, and I glanced down at his ticket, and I saw his name. His name was Fabio Madonna.
Really?
Yes, and spelled exactly like it should be spelled, Fabio Madonna. And I knew already, like, this is going to be an interesting experience. I look for little things like that when my trip is starting so that I can gauge, like, how interesting is this going to be? Imagine being named Fabio Madonna. So we're talking about a real man out there right now. His name, I mean, and so that's why I say I'm not going to go further with this, but I get on the airplane. Once I arrive at the Denver International Airport. Okay, Forrest, do you know the conspiracies about the Denver International Airport?
I've heard there's all kinds of secret government facilities underneath the airport. I've heard the reason it took so long to build is because they were putting extra stuff into it to keep these facilities up. I've heard all kinds of different.
Well, basically, every good conspiracy theory, if you just stick with it and dig deep enough, it ultimately ends up bringing up the Denver International Airport. For one thing, it is the largest airport in the country by size.
Right.
It's 53 square miles. It's huge. And also, if you look at it from outer space.
Symbolism.
Yeah, if you look at the whole thing from outer space, it looks like a big swastika, which that's kind of weird. Like somebody was sitting down and design, like, hey guys, maybe we should make a big swastika, right? So anyway, the creepiest, craziest thing about it is the artwork inside, as you were saying, Forrest. Some of the artwork is the kind of artwork that you scratch your head and you say, why would anybody ever think this is an appropriate thing to paint inside of an airport? I'm talking about, like, again, Nazi-looking guys with gas masks, holding scythes with screaming children around and fire burning and death and destruction. I mean, like, horrible apocalyptic images. And you think, why would anybody want to walk into an airport when they already may be and probably should be stressed and see this type of imagery? It's just bizarre. And there is an enormous underground facility there. Their explanation is that, well, years ago, they wanted to build some kind of a state-of-the-art baggage delivery system underground. And so they spent all these millions of dollars. They built this thing, and then it didn't work out the way they thought it would, so they just closed it down. So now there's just a big bunch of empty tunnels in space down there that nobody's doing anything with, right? Uh-huh. And yet you can see from the outside, they are continually working on this structure, the Denver Airport. And I have seen shows like Brad Meltzer's Decoded, where they go there, or Jesse Ventura's Conspiracy Theory, where these reporters go there and they just start asking basic questions and they get stonewalled at every turn and get the cold shoulder. And it's just weird, right? So, and also, a lot of the symbolism there has, like, Mason symbols around it, New World Order type stuff, you know, I mean, real good, juicy, worldwide domination stuff. So I go there using my body of experience and knowledge, and I'm hoping that I can maybe spend a little time checking out this airport to see if I can interpret something that maybe another regular person wouldn't be able to. Somebody who's not into this. So, the moment I step off the airplane, my phone rings, and it's the driver, and he's waiting for me already. And I was like, shoot, man, you know, because I was going to, like, look around for a couple hours and then call the driver. But nonetheless, I did take my time a little bit going through the airport. Now, it's so huge, it's not like I can check out the whole thing, but I got to see glimpses of this. I got to see some of the imagery. At one point, I walk through this big lobby, and I look down, and I see all these symbols and things, and I'm thinking, I need to get the higher ground and look down on this, like Indiana Jones in the library in The Last Crusade. Yeah. So I climb up on the stairs, and I look down, and I see a big picture, and all I can tell you, and there's no sense in going into to specific reasons why, what I saw there, I interpreted as a warning of an impending flood. That was what, you know, my interpretation was at that moment under those circumstances. That said, I finally get in the car with the driver. It's about a 45-50 minute drive to Boulder from Denver. So as we're heading to Boulder, we're surrounded by all these prairies that are slowly giving rise to the mountains. And the driver, who is a native there, he starts talking about alcohol sickness. And he says, well, you know, you get winded faster when you carry bags upstairs or whatever.
Altitude sickness, you mean? You said alcohol.
Oh, did I say alcohol? Okay, I was you know what I was thinking of then.
Yes.
Altitude sickness, because they say you get drunk faster there. That's one of the things. Yeah, they say at a higher altitude, you get drunk faster. So altitude sickness produces alcohol sickness. And if you get it severely, you get nausea and headaches. Now, to give you some reference point, right now where we live in Asheville, North Carolina, it's around 3,000 to 3,500 feet. So once you get to Boulder, you're getting closer to about 5,600 to 6,000 feet. So, you know, you're getting around double that. You go to a place like Estes Park, it's like 7,500 feet, and then I ended up, you know, driving up into the Rockies over 10,000 feet. So, you know, driving up higher than some airplanes fly. We're going to take a break here. When we come back, I'm going to tell you a little bit about what it was like for me to be that high, what it was like to be in a state that just legalized marijuana, because, yes, I did come into contact with marijuana there. And then ultimately we're going to get into what it's like to go to the Stanley Hotel and then to meet the reincarnation of Nostradamus. I'm Joshua P. Warren. You're listening to the show where the unusual becomes usual. It's called Speaking of Strange.
Stretch to the point of no turning back. Flight of fancy on a wind's wet field.
Carolina, we're talking about the Rocky Mountains tonight. I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren. I just traveled back from the Rockies. Had a fun time. Went out there to do a little project with George Norrie. And had to add on some adventures, of course. And it's true, I stayed at this hotel called the Boulderado. Beautiful old hotel, over 100 years old. Carried my bags up the steps, and sure enough, you do get winded faster when there's less oxygen. Now, as far as getting drunk faster, I couldn't tell the difference. I experimented again and again and again. I just could never tell the difference. But we'll talk a little bit later about, you know, real altitude sickness. But, you know, the funny thing is, Boulder, Colorado, as I kept hearing, it is a lot like Asheville. It's a quaint, charming town. It's got a nice walking district. There are lots of bars and restaurants. The people there love the arts. There are lots of hippies running around. I mean, one thing that was kind of annoying was that, like, every 20 feet, somebody stopping you on the street trying to get you to join Greenpeace or some kind of ecological deal, you know. But it's a very clean, healthy city, and it has a lot of beautiful women and young men with thick, powerful, glossy beards. Just incredible. I don't know what they're smearing on their faces there, Forrest. What they're fertilizing. I mean, like 20-year-old guys with just mountain man beards, you know?
That would put mine and your dad's beard to shame.
Yes, unfortunately, it's true. Such a thick, stiff beard at such a young age. How does it must be the altitude, right?
Exactly.
There's less resistance for each follicle to press that out. But if you walk past a bus stop there, where you have the huddled masses of kind of, you know, gray, poor people, the wall of marijuana smoke that hits you will almost knock you down. You will get high by the reek from the bus station. Now, you smell weed here and there, but the bus station, it's like, wow. If it smelled like this at any other bus station, the SWAT team would be there immediately, you know? I mean, they wouldn't even need warrants or anything. Probable cause would be like, duh, come on, guys, we can smell this. The last time I smelled a wall of weed like that was probably almost 20 years ago when I was in New Orleans on the banks of the Mississippi having a run-in with the vampire crowd. These people in Boulder, Colorado are burning down. So, and they say it's expensive to live in Boulder. So, you know, for all I know, the poor people there are making $50,000 a year.
True.
But they're blowing it all on weed. So anyway, I get there. It's a great environment. I'm having a good time. I'm really tired, of course. First night, I pretty much just like crash out. Well, I had a whole big day to myself, and I had found out that, amazingly enough, talk about synchronicity, talk about irony. This one weekend that I was going to be there just so happens to also be the weekend when Dave Schrader of Darkness Radio is producing his big event at the Stanley Hotel. Dave does events, and he was going to have his last big event at the Stanley Hotel. Now, obviously, I wasn't invited to this, but I happened to be 45 minutes away, so I figured I'll drop in and crash a little bit and say hi, right? Because just because he's there doesn't mean I can't go see the hotel, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. I didn't plan it this way. So, anyway, I decide I'm going to rent a vehicle, and they're like, all we have is this big, giant pickup truck. It's big 4x4, super manly. I was like, I will take that in a heartbeat. Next thing you know, I'm in a pickup truck. I'm rolling through the Rockies. There's Skynyrd on the radio. My balls have officially dropped. Is that okay to say on the radio, Forrest?
You just said it. We
okay.
Can't do anything about it now.
I'm telling you, this was the ultimate, like, man experience. I think my beard started growing a little more thickly at this point. So you're going through, you're seeing these breathtaking views. Just incredible places where you're like, I need to go back here and just make a movie right here of some kind. I'll just find a guy, say, you're the miner. You just go mine something. I'll figure out how to cut it in later. So anyway, I get to the Stanley Hotel. Now, we're going to be talking a lot about the Stanley Hotel next hour, so I won't spend too much time on it now. It's a big, beautiful place. It is spooky. It kind of sits above the town of Estes Park, and it looks like it belongs there. It's like a palace, and that's literally why I guess you'd call it like the Overlook Hotel. These, you know, fantastic snowy mountains in the background, and just herds of elk just running everywhere. You got to be really careful or you'll hit an elk. I mean, I couldn't believe these big, huge herds that were just, they dominate the place, you know, these elk. I guess everybody's cool with that, I guess. So I go inside the Stanley, and I see some of our friends, some of the people who were on our Transylvania trip, Shelley. I saw Dave. Jeff Belanger was there. And it turns out that Andrea, our friend from Canada, her roommate is Callie Sherrill, who is the expert on the Stanley.
Really?
Yeah. So Andrea's roommate, Callie, gives me like this personal tour all around the Stanley and shows me all of these cool places. And again, she's about to be on the show here. And I thought, this worked out so well, you know. So, unfortunately, I couldn't be there that long that day. I had to eventually make my way back to Boulder to get, you know, down to work. So, Andrea decides she's going to take me off to lunch, right? So, Andrea and I, we go down to this saloon in the town of Estes Park. And Estes Park looks like a little pioneer town. It really does. It's one of those places that I loved it. You know, it's all just all boarded and it's wooden panels and you're walking into old-fashioned places. We go into this old saloon. We sit down. We have a couple beers. And Andrea says, this is my treat. She says, you know, I'm going to order some special stuff to take us back to Transylvania or whatever. And I was like, okay, fine. So the waitress comes and brings out a plate that has some fried meats on it. And I was like, what is this? And she was like, I'll tell you after you eat it.
Oh, no, that's never good.
Now, I never fall for that trick. But In this particular case, I'm like, seriously, you know, it's fried. How bad can it be, right? Anything. She says, no, take a bite, and then I'll tell you what it is. So I'm like, all right, fine. We're in a saloon. It's, you know, it's Colorado. We're there to have a good time. I pick up a piece of this meat, take a bite of it. She says, what does that taste like to you? And I thought for a second, and I was like, well, it's kind of pasty on the inside. Almost has a livery kind of flavor to it. I said, you know, the texture kind of reminds me of this, like, the kind of head cheese, blood sausage stuff that we had in Romania. As you know, it's fried, so, you know, it's pretty good. But other than that, you know, I probably wouldn't go for that kind of irony, livery, pasty taste. And she takes a picture of me right as I eat this, by the way. Yeah, which that's also a horrible sign when people do that to you. I think we'll post this on Speaking of Strange. So I'm like, okay, what is it? She says, well, we're in the Rocky Mountains.
Oh. Yeah.
So I got us Rocky Mountain oysters.
Oh.
Yeah. Bull balls. Let's just put it right out there. Bull
wow.
balls.
Wow. Okay.
I never intended in my life to eat such a thing. It's a very good thing that I'm a good sport. Because being tricked into eating something like that is probably not the nicest thing to do, right? I think that's maybe a decision that you should make.
For yourself. I mean, you've given us the decision here in the studio.
That's right. That's right. I gave you guys the decision, and then I went over there, and it turns out they didn't have them anymore. I didn't even get the option. I've eaten that part of a bull now. But, you know, the crazy thing is, I was like, well, I've already taken one bite, and I just finished it up.
Might as well eat it.
I finished it up because it was actually, it was good because it was fried, and I don't usually eat fried stuff. So,
good source of protein.
This year, I have eaten brains, which they call sweetbreads. I had brains at a special function in Asheville. I've had tripe in Romania. Also in Romania, I had the blood cheese and the head sausage. And now I've had Rocky Mountain oysters. This year, I've eaten just all the nastiest stuff in the world that you can find in a reasonable restaurant. I'm sure there are nastier things, you know, if you went to Asia. But still... Now I'm the only guy in the studio who has eaten true oysters, right?
Sounds like you just threw down the gauntlet.
And you know what? I wouldn't have even thought about that. Honestly, it didn't occur to me that I was in the Rocky Mountains and there were Rocky Mountain oysters around. But there were. Thank you, Andrea. Thank you for sharing a new experience with me. Okay, when we come back, I'm going to tell you about meeting... the real reincarnation, in my opinion, of Nostradamus and what he had to say. What he told me, what he has to say to you. It's interesting because it does apply to 2012, and no, it's not all good. I'm Joshua P. Warren. You're listening to Speaking of Strange.
You hardly ever saw granddaddy down here. Big day, dude.
me tell you something. Andrea got her just desserts because after we ate the Smoky Mountain oysters, we got in the truck. We drove all the way up to Timberline. We're over 10,000 feet. We head back down. She starts getting sick. Now, I, being a rugged fella here who lives in the mountains of western North Carolina, I'll be honest with you, I did feel a little bit uneasy in my stomach for, like, the rest of the day. But, no, she got full-on, you know, like, nauseated headache, just kind of, like, ruined her experience for a day or two there. So, that's what you got. You earned that one, Andrea, by tricking me into eating things that men are not supposed to ingest. But, you know, now, Forrest, that I've done it, are you going to go out and do it?
Not on purpose.
So, but listen to this. Okay, I drive back to Boulder that night. Excuse me, we're in the last few minutes of hour number one. And next hour, we're going to talk about the Stanley Hotel a little more, The Shining, right? Now, of all the other guests who were going to be on the program that George Norrie was doing that same day, the one that I was hoping I'd get to meet most is a man named John Hogue. If you've never seen what he looks like, look him up. He looks like Nostradamus. He has a big grayish beard. He wears a little weird-looking knitted cap. And I've been keeping up with his predictions for years. Now, he is the world's number one Nostradamus scholar. And little by little, he began to look like Nostradamus, and then he started making predictions. And every one of his predictions that I have ever heard or seen has come true. Every single one. And if his predictions had not come true so often, I wouldn't be so intrigued. I would just say, oh, you know, some other wacko who's trying to be Nostradamus. But no, this guy actually is amazing. And I was hoping I would get a chance to meet him. Well, as synchronicity would have it, I go back to my room at the hotel, and I get a little work done, and my plan for the night is to do one more thing. There's a bar in the basement called the Catacombs. So I figured I'm going to go down and check out this place called the Catacombs. I'll have a beer or two, come back up, and go to sleep. That was it. I step outside of my room to go down to the Catacombs. And at that precise second, of that precise minute, I look across the atrium and I see John Hogue. Turns out, he has just gotten off his airplane flight, has had a rough time with the trip, and his plan was to go straight to his room and never leave again and just get room service. So I stepped out of my room at the precise second that he was walking across to go to his room. And I said, John Hogue. And he turns. And I walked up and I said, I am Joshua Warren. And we embraced. And he lit up. And he said, I've had such a rough trip. I was kind of feeling grumpy. But now I'm feeling good. I'm feeling positive. The moment you said my name, he says, hey, let's go have a beer. Turns out, for hours, John Hogue and I am hanging out together. We've only got a couple minutes left, unfortunately. Because if you'd been a fly on the wall that night, and you'd been able to hear the conversations that John Hogue and I had about the most epic, crazy, sophisticated, complex cosmic issues known to humankind, people would have probably paid hundreds of dollars to just be a part of this conversation. But what I can tell you is, I've got to cut to the chase here. One thing I asked him, how do you do it? How do you see the future over and over again, year after year, for decades, so accurately? Are you like Nostradamus? Do you stare into a tripod full of water? Do you look into a black mirror? What is your technique? How do you do this? And he says, the hardest part is to get past yourself. He says, you are sitting there full of subconscious biases and wishes and he goes into a state of meditation, and he says, if you can move past yourself, the future is just sitting there. You can see it. It's not even like a big deal. So that said, I was like, all right, what's going to happen with this 2012 situation? He said, well, when a new season kicks in, the flowers don't just pop out of the ground overnight. It takes time for them to emerge. And he said, the two main things that we are going to deal with is that the next pretty much 15 years are going to be the most difficult years in the history of humankind. War and the rising of the oceans is going to reach a height that we never even imagined. And that if this is the test, can we make it through the next 15 years? It's not good. It's not good. We're going to have to take a break. When we come back, I will have Callie Sherrill, and we're going to talk about the Stanley Hotel, the Shining Hotel. I'm Joshua P. Warren. You're listening to the show where the unusual becomes usual. It's called Speaking of Strange.
Let it not fall. Come a ten about twice.